Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to NBC Sports Philadelphia. The guests you want to hear from, the Phillies information you need. It's At the Yard with Jim Salisbury.
Hello and welcome back to At the Yard. I'm Jim Salisbury. We are presented by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. If it is your heart, demand Deborah. Visit demanddeborah.org. And a reminder, please subscribe to At the Yard, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And today I am in Dodger Stadium, one of the most beautiful ballparks in the land. And next week is the Major League Baseball draft. And as you know, here on At the Yard, we try to keep it timely. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the draft today, and who better than Ben Davis, Phillies analyst, Phillies broadcaster, former Major League catcher with the Padres and the Mariners, and former number two pick in the 1995 draft. Ben, what are those kids going through that are going to be drafted next week? What's the excitement level?
Well, they're very excited. They're going through a lot of anxiety, a lot of nervousness. But they, one thing that I hope they can remember is this is something that, you know, they're only going to go through once, most likely, unless they decide to go to college and then ultimately get drafted again. But this is an opportunity for them to really cherish, enjoy the whole experience. And it is an experience. A lot goes into it. And you just have to really, you know, count your blessings that you're in such a environment where you could go that high in the draft.
Now, you were the number two pick in the 1995 draft, and that was a really, really good draft. You know, I looked up some of the names, refreshed my memory. Darren Erstad went number one. Ben Davis went number two. Jose Cruz, Kerry Wood, Todd Helton, Jeff Jenkins, Matt Morris. I remember this well. The Phillies took Reggie Taylor that year. A guy named Roy Halladay went, I think, 17th. Carlos Beltran, Sean Casey, Joe Nathan. Two other very interesting names in that 1995 draft. One is a guy who's won a whole bunch of Super Bowls with the New England Patriots, Tom Brady.
Wow.
He was a catcher with the...
I know that.
Yep. A catcher from outside of San Mateo, California. He went number 507 overall. So you can tell your kids you went 505 picks ahead of Tom Brady. Obviously, he took the football route, and I think that's worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
And there was a gentleman who went number 1,488 in the 57th round. So you would have went 1,486 picks ahead of this guy, and he's now the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, Gabe Kapler. It's strange. The draft, it's not as big as the NFL draft, or the at least in exposure, the NFL or the NBA, but it's got a life of its own. It's exciting and it's fun. But when I mention those names, what kind of memories does it stir?
Well, it's obviously playing against a handful of those guys. Obviously, some are going to be Hall of Famers. I would say now it's much more of a science. Obviously, you know, I was very fortunate to get drafted that high, play in the big leagues. But you look at some of the other names on the list, back then it really wasn't so much of a science. It was more of a projection and where you think someone's going to be ultimately, 15 years down the road. I was 6'2", 170 pounds when I graduated high school. How they projected me, I had a good arm. I was a switch hitter. They projected me. I'd fill out a little bit more, maybe have a little bit more power. I did okay. I put up some decent numbers in the big leagues, but obviously not like some of the players that you had mentioned there. But it's very gratifying, and it gives me a sense of, gratitude that I was thought of that highly.
When did it dawn on you, maybe dawn on your mom and dad, that, wow, I might have a chance, I'm a baseball player, I love baseball, I grew up playing it, I might have a chance to not only play professionally, but I might have a chance to get drafted in the top five picks in the country. When did that all kind of hit you?
When I actually got the phone call, because I just, you know what, Jim, a lot of people told me, you're going to go really high. You're going to be a first rounder. I actually had one of my fifth and final visit was to Stanford, to go on a recruiting visit to Stanford. And I remember Mark was called me on the phone a week before that, and he said, we're canceling your visit. And I said, why are you doing that? And he said, you will never step foot on a college campus. And I'm thinking, how is that even possible? You know, I never thought, and obviously he was right, I just never thought of myself as that kind of player. I graduated Malvern Prep with a class of 80 kids, you know, and I didn't think it was going to be, I didn't think I was going to go that high. I knew I could play. I just didn't think I'd, people thought of me that I could play at that elite level and go that high.
The number two pick in the, what was your signing bonus?
$1.3 million.
$1.3 million. I want to just kind of remind people, this year the Phillies picked number three overall. And the it was a little different when Ben was drafted. The money wasn't as big, and there were really not a lot of guidelines. Now there are slots, and there are guidelines for signing bonuses. This year, the number two pick is worth $7.4 million. That's a lot of glue. That's changed a lot. What do you think when you hear those numbers?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's all relative. Mike Schmidt was the first million-dollar player, right? Wasn't he? I mean, you look at now, I think the average salary in the big leagues is $4 million. It's just all relative. Back in 95, obviously, $1.3 million was a substantial, I mean, substantial amount of money. Anything with two commas in it is pretty darn cool. But, yeah, obviously, now it's a lot different. $7.4 million for that slot, I'd be happy with that.
Now, back when you were going through this, I don't think showcases were quite as big as they are now. Showcase events where they take these athletes, they really have them in all sports, and you're parading these athletes in front of scouts and executives, and they're getting a good read on you in probably, I guess you'd maybe say, in a controlled setting or tournament settings or whatnot. But back, you know, the emphasis was really on the scouting. The scout would come to your ball games at Malvern Prep. He'd watch you play Legion, other summer leagues. What was it like knowing that you had all those eyeballs on you?
It was cool. I know, especially my senior year, I had, you know, there were tons of scouts. There was probably minimum 20 scouts at every game. General managers were there. I didn't know who any of them were at the time.
Did it make you nervous?
It didn't make me nervous because we play the game because it's fun, you know, and I wanted to have fun playing baseball my senior year. And I was able to do that. And I wouldn't say I was nervous. I think more anxious than anything, just to go out and want to perform in front of them. Is it a lot mentally on an 18-year-old kid? Yeah, it is. But fortunately, I had a good upbringing, and my parents kept me focused and centered and level-headed, and that, I think, really helped me out a lot along the way. But, yeah, the showcases nowadays are completely different. My junior year, we played 15 games, and I was very fortunate. I was invited to the Junior National Games in St. Louis that summer. And from those four different teams, there was a North, South, East, and West team. And from those four teams, they picked 25 players. And I was one of those 25. And we played in a universal tournament up in Brandon, Manitoba. And we came in second place. I was the defensive player of the whole tournament. So I guess you could say that was really a showcase tournament. But we were playing for our country, and we were playing, you know, against other countries. And there were obviously a lot of scouts at that, but nowadays it's all travel ball. The summer leagues are kind of, there really aren't any leagues anymore. It's just travel teams, and you go and play. And but yeah, the showcases are, they are showcases, and you pay and you go to these big deals, and that's where all the scouts are.
Your family went through it a little bit with your older brother Glenn, mm-hmm. who was drafted actually by these Dodgers, correct?
He was.
And did that experience, his experience, help you deal with it at all?
It helped me in the fact that, you know, I was a year below him at Malvern, and he got drafted in the 18th round out of by the Minnesota Twins. He decided to go to Vanderbilt. So I actually ended up I watched him go through the process, how he handled scouts. He was offered a contract by the Twins, ended up not taking it, got a full ride to Vandy, went there. Ended up being a first-round draft pick of the Dodgers back in 97. So it worked out for him. But having the scouts come watch him, I think, obviously helped me because they say, hey, he's that skinny little kid behind the plate. I think it helped me out a lot.
How about another really interesting part of the whole draft dynamic is agents. I mean, they're out there. They're identifying you guys as top prospects. Honestly, they see dollar signs. They see talent. They want to represent that talent. That's their business. How many of them were knocking down your door, and how many of them visited you and were in your living room, and how did you end up choosing an advisor?
Well, there were quite a few. It seemed like there was at least one a week going into my senior year in the fall, and there were a handful. And it ultimately ended up going with Ron Shapiro, his group out of Baltimore, who at the time represented Kirby Puckett and Cal Ripken Jr., a handful of guys, big name guys. But he came, Scott Boras came to the house. The Hendricks brothers came to the house. The agent who I currently use right now, Rex Gary, he actually came to my house my senior year to see if he could be my agent. But that was a process as well. I remember my dad being on the phone with Scott Boras till all hours of the night talking about what he could do for us and the things that they provide for their clients. And Ron in Baltimore had a very good reputation, down to earth, and we ultimately went with him.
Did you at any point think you had a chance to go number one?
Honestly, Jim, I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought. I was just concerned with playing baseball, and once the Padres said that, they're very interested, a lot of teams were there. The Angels, I guess, were back and forth between Erstad and myself. They showed a lot of interest, and I'm thinking, man, if I go number one overall, that would be really cool. But anywhere, obviously, getting drafted, period, is a thrill.
Tell me about how the Padres kind of bared down on you. Did you have an individual workout with them? Did you have any interviews, anything like that?
No, nothing individual. We were able to – I kind of had an idea maybe the night before that something was going to happen with them. We were throwing some numbers around, and, again, you really don't know until you get that phone call.
Did they give you any in the NFL, they do those Wunderlich tests. Any testing on your noggin?
Oh, yeah, plenty. It was just a standard test. I remember being on the phone for minimum 2 hours. It was a litany of questions and weird questions. If you see, three birds on a telephone wire, which one would you think would fly off first? Like, just weird questions. What do you eat for breakfast? All kinds of things that are just kind of like, they just want to make sure that, hey, we're going to invest a lot of money into somebody. We're going to make sure he's okay between the ears. And I remember getting done that test on the phone. And it wasn't through a certain team. It was just through, I guess, Major League Baseball, whoever provided the test. I remember getting off that phone and just like, I was so mentally drained. It was remarkable.
Wow. Another way the draft has changed is, now they have a show televised on MLB Network, lasts a few hours, and then prior to that, guys were learning they were signed or drafted on the internet, kind of in real time. But when you were drafted, it was, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to come home, and the phone's going to ring, right?
It was on a landline. I remember I was out mowing the grass that morning, just riding the John Deere around, and came in, showered up, and I guess there's a certain time they started, and then basically just waiting for the phone call. And we had a lot of family and friends at the house, and there was a bunch of news crews there that were there, but just waiting for that phone call, waiting for that phone to ring on the landline. And I ended up getting the call, and they said, "This is Kevin Towers with the San Diego Padres, general manager, and we chose you number two overall in the draft, and want you to sign." And it was such a thrill.
How soon after you signed were you on a plane off to, I guess, maybe Arizona or a minicamp or something?
Yeah, it was. We had everything worked out. We got the deal done. We flew out the next day. Our family flew out to San Diego, where I got introduced before the game and all that as our first-round draft pick. And we signed the papers. They went through a physical. And I remember I signed, and I went back a couple days after that and actually graduated from Malvern. And a couple days after that, I flew to Arizona. We went to Peoria, Arizona, had a mini camp for a week, and then hopped on a plane and went to Idaho Falls to play in the Pioneer League.
Wow, what was that like?
It was different. I'm an 18-year-old kid, small town, and then I'm in Idaho. I'm in Idaho Falls playing with 24 other guys, half of which didn't speak English. That's, very fortunate I was able to take Spanish at Malvern to help me out with that. But it was, I'm like, what did I just get myself into? What am I doing out here? 15-hour bus rides. It was a long summer. But it was a fun summer, and I loved every minute of it.
Was that the Pioneer League?
Pioneer League.
Pioneer League. So are you a marked man when you enter pro ball in a rookie league like the Pioneer League, where everybody in that league knew your name, whether you knew it or not? There's Ben Davis of the Padres. He was the number two pick in the country. Are you a marked man? Is there pressure with that?
Yeah, there is. I remember we were in Ogden, Utah, and my number was 13. I always wore 13. It was my dad's number. I wore it. And I remember we were in Ogden, Utah, and I had number 13 on, and I remember some fan yelling, "Hey, Davis, why don't you put a dot in between the 1 and the 3? Because that was my signing bonus, $1.3 million. So, yeah, they knew your business. They knew exactly what was going on, and you would hear it from time to time. But for the most part, people were civilized.
So when you go out to San Diego for the press conference, it's a big deal. Do you meet Mr. Padre, Tony Gwynn?
Yeah, I met Tony Gwynn. What was really cool is he took me in the back, and he said, because Tony he swung a small bat. You know, he's used a 33-29. And again, I'm 6'2", 170 pounds, and I'd never swung a wooden bat before. So I wanted to make sure I got a light bat, and he said, "Hey, take some of these." So it was cool because I got big league wood. I got the best wood there was, and Tony Gwynn got the best wood there was. And it was great. Now, in the Pioneer League that first year, people were allowed to use a bomb bat, bomb, B-A-U-M.
I remember those. They were like a compound.
It was a composite bat. Composite. Yeah, they didn't break. But I was using the real deal. I was using the real wood, and I had a whole box of them, and Tony hooked me up.
You had his actual bats, or did he get the manufacturer to make you some?
No, I had his actual bats. I had a bunch of different ones from different guys on the team. I remember the first bat, I still have it at home. It was my first professional hit. It was an Andujar Cedeño model. It's a Worth Andujar Cedeño bat. And I broke it eventually, but yeah, it's still in my house back home.
That's a thrill getting to use Tony Gwynn's. Did you use that model your entire career, that small bat?
I did not. No, I actually, ended up using a 34, 32 for most of my career. But there were times where I would use this bat. I remember one game up in Shea Stadium. It was a real hot day. I was exhausted. It was a day game, and we were facing Al Leiter. And Al would always throw that cutter in on righties, and I used Tony's bat that day. Just because my bat felt heavy. I said, "Hey, T, can I swing your lumber today?" He said, "Absolutely." So, but yeah, I'd swing it every now and again.
Well, I'm joined talking about the draft with Ben Davis. And just to recap, it is next week. The Phillies will pick third in that draft. They've had some high picks lately. Last year, they picked number eight, and they selected outfielder Adam Haseley. The year before that, number one, outfielder Mickey Moniak. The year before that, number 10, Cornelius Randolph, another outfielder. And in 2014, a pretty good pitcher named Aaron Nola. 2013, a shortstop at 16 named J.P. Crawford. I don't expect – all of those picks were in the top 16, by the way. And I don't expect the Phillies to be picking that high next year because they are an improved ball club, should finish higher in the standings. And after this break, we're going to talk a little bit about the 2018 Phillies with Ben Davis. More coming up after this health tip from Deborah Heart and Lung Center.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is At the Yard, the podcast.
Ben, as I look at these Phillies, and I think of one word, improvement. Last year, they lost 96 games. They did not win their 30th game until after the All-Star break, July 16th. Well, on this trip, they have already won their 30th ball game before the end of May. What is the area you think is most improved?
The pitching. The starting pitching has been dynamite. They've just been absolutely good. I mean, in my opinion, it was the biggest question mark going into spring training. We had Aaron Nola and four other guys. even after the addition of Jake Arrieta, it was, okay, we have Nolan Arrieta. That's great. But we have three unproven guys at the back end of that rotation. And you're thinking, all right, how are they going to shape up? Well, they've been fantastic this year. They've really done well. They've kept the team in ball games. They've gone deeper into games. And the bullpen has been lights out. They've been so darn good. And I think that's really the reason. I mean, you look at some of the averages on the team right now, there's not a whole lot of high averages. And they're still able to win ball games right as of right now. They're a game and a half out of first place. They're able to do it with pitching. And that's the main reason they're in where they are right now.
We talked a lot about the draft, and when Aaron Nola in 2014, Phillies picked him number 7 out of LSU. One of the reasons they picked him, he was polished. He was a pitcher. And, you know, the team was in a rebuild then, and they needed guys who could move quick. They really had a dearth of starting pitching. He was a guy that could move quick. But you kind of always heard, well, he's going to get there quick, but he's not going to be like a number one. He's going to be like that kind of mid-range guy, which nothing wrong with that. You need them all, right, in my opinion. A good pitcher is a good pitcher. I don't care about those numbers. But maybe was he a little bit underrated coming out of that draft?
I don't know if he's underrated. And Jim, I'll be honest with you. When I first saw Aaron, when he came up, I'm thinking, okay, here's a guy with a decent fastball and a really good curveball. And that's it. That's all he had, Jim. And I'm thinking, okay, he could be a middle-of-the-rotation guy. He can maybe be a 2, maybe be a 3. But that would be it. Boy, he's turned himself into now with the addition of this changeup. His command is excellent, and he is a top-of-the-rotation guy, and not just on the Phillies, on any ball club. He has been electric. He's been great. His mound presence has always been good, but he's taken himself and his ability to a different level.
He's a real good one. I really enjoy watching him pitch because I think he's a quiet kid, but he's a great competitor. He's got an internal toughness. And he's very smart. He's very savvy on the mound. I'm also enjoying, like every other baseball fan, Phillies fan, I'm enjoying watching Sir Anthony Dominguez. I mean, he's power. He's got presence. He looks like a man on the mound. What do you think of him?
He's a man child. I mean, he's you talk about electric. He's got a huge arm, but he's got two pitches that he can strike you out with, the fastball and the slider. He's got great movement on the fastball. And he's a guy that, you know, you're getting a fastball, but you still know you can't hit it. He's that good because of that late movement. It only cuts a little bit, and sometimes it'll go straight, sometimes it'll cut, but it's the movement. You might think you're on a fastball, but you have that late movement, and next thing you know, it's by you, or you're fouling it off, or breaking your bat. He's special.
You know, I think Gabe Kapler, he doesn't want to use exact names for roles. They're pitchers. He's reluctant to call somebody his closer. But at some point, maybe even on this trip, Sir Anthony's going to come out for the ninth inning and he's going to be the closer. How would you handle that guy if you were the manager? How would you handle a young talent like Sir Anthony Dominguez?
I'd just go hand him the ball.
But would you close him or would you work him in slowly?
I think right now it depends on the route that this team's going to go. I think if they're going to continue to compete and be, you know, first, second place, then, yeah, you're going to need a backhand guy that, you know, when that door shuts, the game's over. And I think Dominguez, Sir Anthony, can be that guy. I would let him go and close. I would. But if the team starts to fall out of contention, he's going to need to pitch. He's need to get innings under his belt. You just can't wait to get a lead and then throw him in the ninth.
Looking ahead a little bit to July trade deadline, which is always an exciting time, and it seems like right after the draft, everybody starts focusing a little bit on that. What do you think, as you kind of eyeball this team, what would be a need that you think they might look to address at the trade deadline?
They need offense. With Rhys Hoskins being out now, I mean, he started to taper off a little bit. They need the guys to put some runs on the board. I mean, Carlos Santana's been swinging it better. Jorge Alfaro's been swinging it better. Cesar at the top, I love Cesar Hernandez leading off. Odubel's tapered off. They need offense. They need some guys that can put some runs on the board to complement this very good pitching staff.
Yeah, they do. The offense has been very inconsistent. They're going to miss Hoskins, even though he had a tough month of May. I mean, just the threat, the presence. How he took a ball off his bat, 95 miles an hour, off his jaw. From your perspective, how kind of scary was that?
It's very scary. And to be honest with you, Jim, I've never seen anything like that before. You've seen guys obviously foul balls off their legs or their back legs, but I've never seen a guy foul ball off his chin like that. It was scary. The one thing, I think it was nice to see him come back the next day, hit a pinch hit double down the line. That was good. He showed no signs of, like he was scared up there or anything like that. The good thing is it wasn't a pitched ball. It was actually something that came off his bat. So it's not like he's worried about a ball getting away from a pitcher.
Put you right on the spot here. Phillies are surprise. One of the surprises of baseball, they're right in it. Can they stay in it? Can they play, you know, can they contend right into September and maybe beyond?
The only way they can do it is if they can find some offense. I think that with the way the Nats are playing, they've been playing lights out. I think the Braves are going to continue to play well, especially with our pitching staff that they have and that lineup that they have. The Phillies are going to have to hit. They're going to have to find some offense and find it from somewhere.
Well, the gates are opening here at Dodger Stadium. Phillies are taking batting practice. The music on the loudest sound system in baseball is starting to pulsate. Before I let you go, I love Dodger Stadium. Where did it rank on your personal list?
You know what? I think I underestimated it when I played here because we played here so often, being with San Diego. I mean, it's so many games here. The field's in a lot better condition than it was back then. It used to be real dry and hard back in the day. But I think I kind of lost sight of how pretty it is. I would say it's definitely in my top five. Fenway is still number one in my book. I think it's the most beautiful place in the world. I think AT&T Park is right there. R Park third, PNC in Pittsburgh, and then this place.
Well, I agree with you. It's one of the best. I love coming here. And I appreciate you joining me on At the Yard. And like I said, we really are at the yard. And the draft is next week. Phillies are playing good ball, and I want to thank Ben Davis for his insights on both of them, and I want to thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time at The Yard.
Thanks for listening to At The Yard on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Be sure to subscribe to At The Yard wherever you listen to podcasts.